I want to talk to you this first half hour about the conduct of an auditor. Auditors have been known to be good, and auditors have been known to be bad, and there's a difference between a good auditor and a bad auditor. And as long as you're dwelling in the never-never land, that it is some instinctive thing which somebody develops, or some kind of a psychic touch or a telepathy or something that you pick up with a great deal of experience, then it is never-never land you're dwelling in. It's a very simple thing to be an auditor. As long as you look at the various extremely simple mechanisms that go into making an auditor, it helps a great deal to be a human being. It helps a great deal to have a little charity in your heart, too. It helps a lot to have a rather tolerant attitude toward mankind at large, because your preclear has been into a lot of things. When I say charity, I mean just that. There's a lot to that. If you're going around being very, very censoring about the conduct of human beings at large, if you have various prejudices that you would like to introduce into the case, why, naturally, the case doesn't fare quite so well. But the whole idea of tolerance enters in here quite completely. And, of course, tolerance has a lot to do with anyone's case level. A case is as well off as it is tolerant of viewpoints. The goal of processing could be summed up to be a complete tolerance of viewpoints. This doesn't mean on an apathetic level, it just means a free tolerance. Freedom, by the way, to like or dislike things pretty well at will, but this adds up to, in the long run, to a rather wide tolerance of existence at large. And an auditor who has good tolerance has no difficulty assuming the viewpoint of the preclear and has no real difficulty getting the preclear to assume his viewpoint. But an auditor who is extremely intolerant or who is very prejudiced on certain levels of conduct will find a difficulty in getting the preclear to assume his viewpoint or vice versa. So let's go into this very factually and see that an auditor is good fairly well in ratio to his own case level. His case level being determined by his ability to tolerate various viewpoints throughout this universe. And his case level being based on that, then, naturally, this shows up intimately in auditing by a good auditor being tolerant of the preclear's various attitudes and viewpoints, and a bad auditor being intensely intolerant of them. And we've just got the preclear confessing that he beat his mother twice on Sunday every week for 4 or 5 years, and the auditor decides that this is something reprehensible. And, of course, the preclear ceases to make progress because the auditor enters something into his own conduct which derails the progress of the case. More important, however, than attitude is the actual mechanic of auditing itself. If you think that you can telepath your emotion to a preclear sometime, try to get a lamppost to listen to you. Why don't you throw some telepathic waves at a lamppost and see how it reacts? Your preclear's level of sensitivity to your mood is somewhat comparable to a lamppost. He is completely unable, really, to sense what you're about. And if he does sense it, quite ordinarily, the most of the preclears you'll be working with, if he does sense it, why, what do we have there? We have a complete misinterpretation of it. If your preclear is very, very alert to your attitude, he's slightly afraid of you. And being slightly afraid of you, he is, of course, at a tone level which is going to misinterpret those things which you are saying and doing. And the first thing he'll misinterpret and distrust is any kind impulse on your part. You know, you're solicitous, and this practically finishes you, as far as you're concerned. There must be something deeply significant and hidden in this tremendous solicitude which you've demonstrated, because obviously nobody could feel any solicitousness or tolerance for this individual. This is his first premise. So even if you did pay a lot of attention to attitude, it would be misinterpreted anyway, and he's not going to pick up your mood, and he's not going to pick up your sensitivity, and you're not going to pick up anything off of him by being sensitive. So, as I say, let's lay aside these super sensitive considerations, which were so terribly important to psychoanalysis, and go immediately into the mechanics of a two-way communication system. Your interest in the preclair is demonstrated by the fact that you are auditing him. This is sufficient. You audit him on this basis of rather good processing, and he is very sure of your interest in him. Why? The mechanics of auditing themselves relay this to the preclair, that you are interested in him. Two-way communication system, you want this individual to communicate. You want him to tell you about any present time problem he has. Right there, you have secured the fact that you've secured the fact that you're interested in him, and that he has something that you want to know about. You see, just the mechanics of that takes care of it. Now, there's a lot of things, however, that you had better be interested in that the preclair is doing. You really shouldn't be even vaguely interested in what the preclair thinks you're doing. You devil with that. He'll add it up in all different directions and get arithmetical impossibilities in all directions. But it's unimportant. He'll evaluate wrongly. That's all I'm saying, so there's no reason to be careful of it. He'll draw wrong conclusions. So we go into it on this basis that we are interested in the preclair, and we're going to keep a two-way communication system running, and we're going to watch his communication lags, and we're going to monitor against this. And one other thing that is terribly important, that's right in there with communication. Find out what he's doing. Find out what the preclair is doing. Now let's go into that one again. Find out what the preclair is doing. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood about this particular point, and the best thing that you could do as an auditor is find out what the preclair is doing. And just for variation, find out what he's doing. Now, this actually, honest, I'm not just telling you this for your amusement. It's a fact that auditor errors actually don't sum up much in the field of invalidation evaluation. Anybody who's even faintly trained knows very well that invalidation and evaluation are probably going to wreck the preclair and stop him in his tracks. No good auditor would fall into that one. It just stops the progress of the case. It really doesn't even put the case under your control. It takes the case out from underneath your control. You do a lot of evaluation and invalidation to a preclear, and he is no longer auditable by you. You have not only are not controlling him, you're not auditing him. So there's no point in it, and an auditor drops that rather easily. Where does he err? He errs in listening to what the preclear has to say and finding out what the preclear is doing. And there is where an auditor errs, and there is where an auditor breaks down, and there is where you find the preclear stuck after he's had a bad session with some auditor. He says he's had a bad session. Well, why has he had a bad session? There will only be two reasons he's had a bad session, actually. You'll find out it won't go into the almost criminal activity of evaluation and validation. It won't go into the basis of using bad commands or something like that. That isn't of importance. What is of importance is the auditor didn't listen to what the preclear was saying and didn't try to find out what the preclear was doing. And right there, the case will bog down, and there you will find the preclear parked. And if you want the bottom rung of stuck in an auditing session so as to clean up past sessions or something, that's the error that has been made. Just period. I mean, that is the error that's been made. There isn't any other error of any importance. Preclear might say there are some other errors and so forth, but actually he's forgotten the chief error. And I've blown more auditing off cases by just saying, now, what did you try to tell that auditor? Oh, so, yeah, I'd forgotten all about that. Just at that moment, my mother showed up with the body of a dog. And I said to him, my mother's standing right there. And he said, we'll find some more places where you're not. How do you break down a two-way communication system? Well, a very easy way to do it is take a big pair of pliers and go out and cut one of the wires, the incoming wire. Just cut it, drop it, throw it over in the ditch, and then use the outgoing wire to the preclear. You know, he can't put anything back to you, but you can put out lots to him. Well, the best universe has been doing this to him for ages, so of course he's in this kind of a condition where he's being inflowed on all the time. He's never been permitted to outflow. Well, there's where your boy is stuck. That's that. Right there, he tried to inform the auditor of something and he didn't make it stick. He couldn't communicate with the auditor. And if you were going to make a specialty out of cleaning up cases and that sort of thing, why, you don't have to know these two things about it. One, that auditors quite often roughly address or wake up or try to alert a preclear in the middle of a communication lag. It's not so bad. We got into a big argument about this a couple of units ago, and these guys sometimes have very, very sharp definitions, they think. Well, the auditor who was arguing about this in the unit had never noted, really, or paid much attention to a communication lag. He thought it was boil-off. He thought boil-off and communication lag were synonymous. Well, they're very far from synonymous. And he had awakened people out of boil-off, you know, and shaken them up and so forth and gone on with the session out of boil-off. Well, that's not too bad. You do it gently enough. It's a good way to keep a session rolling. We subjected, you know, boil-off to test, and I have seen individuals boil-off for 300 hours of auditing with no improvement of any kind in the case. This has been thoroughly tested. Is boil-off beneficial or therapeutic? And the answer is no _. So we have boil off there as one manifestation, which is the guy kind of dopes off and goes to sleep. That is caused by havingness. The fellow has run fresh out of havingness. And he's either gotten too much or gotten too little havingness there, and so he goes into a boil off, and that's all there is to that. When you see him start to go into boil off, you should remedy his havingness. That's an easy one. He'll wake right up and alert. Now, That's one manifestation. Well, interruption of a communication lag is an entirely different manifestation. Because the guy is alert, and he's trying, even though he isn't saying a word. And I ran a 3-hour communication lag on a preclear just day before yesterday. 3-hour communication lag. And I thought to myself several times while I was running this, I wonder how many auditors in the field would actually believe that this communication lag was taking place and would put up with it. I don't think there were too many, because it didn't seem to be the kind of a communication lag which should have set in at that point. It was an emergency, an assist, and I was giving this individual several places where the injured limb would be safe. And we got one, we got two, we got three, we got four. Little lag on it, you know, 15, 20 second lag. 5, 6, little lag. Lag cut well down. You would have thought this was almost cleaned up and all of a sudden ran head on into a 3-hour communication lag. Where would this individual's leg be safe? 3 hours later, the individual was trying to answer it. Now, I don't know how long the lag actually was, because the session actually had to end. And the person came out of it to the degree that he could articulate the question. So I considered this a good gain and let it go. I couldn't stay with it any longer, of course. But he could. He'd gotten up to a point where he could articulate the question, which is to say, he knew what he was communication lagging on. Up to that time, it was just having run into the freight train, and he's trying all this time. Your preclear's trying all this time to answer the question. Now, he's trying to answer the question, and he can't answer the question, and the question will fog out on him, and they'll get the question again, and then he'll hold it, and then it'll depart, and he'll hold it, and it'll depart, and then he can't quite articulate it. He just sort of feels it, and so on. He's wide awake. He's trying to think it through. He's trying to get through this one way or the other somehow or another. He's still trying. That's a communication line. And by golly, the auditor, who will break in on that and chew it up and to try to get the preclear off from it, is letting the preclear in for trouble. And there's the other place where you find people stuck on the track. Interrupted communication lag. The auditor found out the preclear didn't answer in the next couple of minutes, so he became impatient and began to rag the preclear around trying to get the preclear to answer. Every single bit of that went in as a direct counter effort to the individual, the preclear's effort to get through the mass of communication connections which made up this communication lag. So we have a problem there, don't we? We have a problem with an auditor. Auditor's going to sit there and think his case is not progressing. He's going to think that there isn't anything happening there. He's going to think that the preclear really should try harder. Or shouldn't just avoid like this. Or he could get all kinds of things. Why could the auditor get a misconception of a communication lag? It's because the auditor, quite commonly in the business of living, has run into situations where people wouldn't answer him. And having run into these situations where the people would not answer him, he, in lack of that data, then became rather desperate. He has a tendency sometimes to become rather hysterical when he finds this preclear sitting there really not answering him. And the auditor's feeling that he must be answered is responsible for his charging into the case and chewing up the preclear in order to get a faster communication lag. Now, you'd be surprised some of the things I've seen auditors do. I saw shortly before he got the old heave, the old foundation, I saw a medical man give a preclear, a racking around. I just listened to it. I mean, I happened to be just outside the door going to go into the auditing room when it started, so I just stopped for a moment to find out if this was really taking place or if this was just a nightmare that somebody had left out in the hall. And started like this. The fellow said, well, let's see. Can't quite get the next phrase. Well, now, come on. If you expect me to audit you, you'll have to answer a little faster than that. Well, I can't quite... what did you say? Well, if you'll just have to speak up. You'll have to talk louder, and you'll have to respond quicker. That's all. We haven't got all day to audit you, and so forth. And besides, your case isn't the most important case here. We've got to get you through and squared up and cleared up and so forth and get you out of here because there are other people that have to be audited too, so you'll just have to speed up your audity, your responses and so forth. You just have to speed this whole thing up. The preclear says, well, what are you talking about? Completely fogged out. So I went in and ended the session and lock scanned the guy up through the session itself and squared him around all right. But the point was there. Yeah, the auditor in that case, although trained in the great sensitivities of the field of healing, indoctrinated thoroughly by the American Medical Association, a priesthood which exists in Chicago, although all these things had taken place, this individual didn't know anything about auditing a preclear. He wrote a book on the subject afterwards, but he just didn't know anything about it. he never would have known anything about it, simply because his own case, his own anxiety to be answered, kept getting in his road every time he tried to audit a preclear. And he would go into a painful, physically painful anxiety at a no response from the preclear. So let's look over that rather sad case. This individual was very intelligent as auditor. He was actually a very good man. There's no doubt about it whatsoever. But in auditing, this anxiety to be answered, to rush the fellow's communication line, to get the data out, was so great, the physical pain which turned on was such that the individual was incapable of becoming an auditor. You say, well, now, why didn't we audit that out of him? Don't be silly. That was 1915. You couldn't nail this guy down long enough to audit anything out of him. And the one incident, by the way, which he went south, east, and west on simultaneously and stopped all auditing on was an eating incident in a past, in a whole track. And at that time, there was a great deal of agitation to stop all research. We had the answer, and we must stop all research now. And we were going into a whole track. I was trying to do something about a lot of manifestations were showing up, trying to catalog them, do a lot of things. And I ran this particular auditor into a whole track incident. And he was a small fish, and he saw a great big fish coming up. Well, this was a chronic somatic this individual had. A slash across his side, and he tried to attribute this to an attempted abortion. He tried to attribute it to all kinds of things all over the track, and it never stuck with anything. Well, he had this little fish being ate by this big fish. The big fish comes in and opens its jaws. That's as far as we got in the incident. At which moment, the preclear left the couch and refused all further auditing from auditors. He would accept auditing from his wife thereafter, but from no auditors. Violent incident, you see. Now, how to get that individual back into communication on the subject of auditing again was more than we had data and techniques to accomplish at that time. This was part of this whole pattern. Now, I'm not just talking idly here and reminiscing. Look at here. Speech is done with mouths. And most preclears who are really bad off, if you ask them to mock up a huge mouth and teeth in front of their faces, they would leave the session or do something desperate about it. They just wouldn't hang around to find out what happened. Because that's the one thing on the whole track that the GE has learned how to do. Run before he is at. When others eat, run. His motto. All right? Here you have a fellow already under strain, already under stress, this preclear is. Here we have the problem is opening his mouth, closing his mouth, and others opening and closing their mouths, and they see that they want to be sure the other fellow is talking, not eating. And they just go into agony if no words come out. And that's the no response question. One of the mechanics that you understand, this is really not the cause of this communication anxiety, but this is a tremendous key in on it. Well, therefore, an auditor has to be in fairly good shape on the subject of eating, really, to audit. Strange, but he does. And he has to be pretty well off on the subject of sex. There's more auditors fail as auditors because they can't keep their hands off that bar preclear other sex. It just can't be done. Freda Fromm Reichman, this is a liability in all fields of psychotherapy. The great Dr. Freda Fromm Reichman wrote a great book, which is the Manual of Psychiatry. And the book is devoted saying, please, please, doctors, do not do that with your female patients. Please, 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 because you should find some release for your libido outside the analysis room. It is possible, she pleads in this book, to find sex outside your clinic. This book, if anybody ever wanted to just open the sordid door Psychiatry. All he has to do is read this book, which is intended only for psychiatrists, recommending them how to conduct their business. You'll find out the book is mainly devoted to just that fact. So that it comes in the field of Scientology is a little more surprising, but it occasionally does. And it comes in, and it always comes in with considerable upset. Where sex, for instance, enters in to the field of auditing very strongly. You'll always find the guy afterwards, the auditor afterwards, whether anything happened or not, you know, that it was really derogatory, you always find him upset about it one way or the other. I don't mean just emotionally upset. He all of a sudden contracted a liaison which he found extended beyond auditing, responsibilities which he didn't want anything more to do with. At first, all he was going to do was audit this case for a while, and the next thing you know, why, he's got the liability of having done more than audit the case, so he has a further responsibility for the case. And all sorts of various manifestations show. I've never ran into anybody yet who wasn't more than willing to take Freda Fromm Reichmann's advice to psychiatrists and that sex does exist outside the clinic. Now, there's one auditor I know of, you possibly do too. He's not in very good graces with the HAS, but he has conducted himself rather calmly about the whole thing. But he was trained in an entirely different field of therapy. And that training has extended over to the fact that he gets sex crossed up with auditing rooms every once in a while, you know? And that guy has been in more trouble and had more grief than anybody ever saw. I had him on an e-meter one day, and I found out that he had entered the field of psychotherapy because doctors had more women than other professional men. That was his basic cause of why he was in the field of psychotherapy. This demonstrates, by the way, an extremely interesting state of self-confidence or lack of it. The fellow couldn't have had any confidence in himself. You know, any male that has any confidence in himself at all, or any female that has any confidence in herself, you know, if she feels fairly secure in life, will find this horrible truth to exist in our modern mid-20th century, is that all you have to do is walk down the street or crack your throttle just a little bit harder. It's remarkable. I don't know what you'd have to be like in this society to run short of second dynamic activity, but I don't think Lon Chaney in his worst disguises ever quite approached it. There certainly is no dearth of sex in this free world, woman suffrage. All we're going to do is get drunk and on beer. You know, my period, you know, I'm timed, you know, like nearly everybody is. And that, of course, was the 20s and 30s. And we drank hard liquor in the 20s and early 30s and so forth. But nowadays, they don't seem to. They seem to be able to get drunk on beer. It just shows you the weakness of the times. Here we have an individual who is taking far too many pains and precautions to procure something which is really very free all over the society. So an auditor can get in trouble that way. But believe me, he can't even get in the kind of trouble with sex that he can get into with one, breaking down that two-way communication system by not letting the pre-cleared talk, two, not finding out what the pre-cleared's doing, and three, chewing in suddenly into these long communication lines. There's the trouble. It isn't on the couch on the second dynamic. There's the real trouble. Now, you as auditors will succeed, really, to the degree that you just follow those things through. You pay attention to them. You'll be very successful. Your pre-clears, you can sit there with a hangover and practically sneering in your beard or all over your beard about this pre-clear's troubles or anything you want to, just obeying those things, and you'll find out your pre-clear will come out thinking you're the most sensitive, sympathetic auditor this pre-clear has ever had. They don't penetrate or recognize beyond this point. It's just the mechanics of auditing. A two-way communication system, when they're trying to answer the question, you leave them alone. And when they're doing something, you want to find out what they're doing. You, of course, have answered up every possible part of being a good auditor.